You're listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Lintonmeyer. My guest for episode 79 is Prateek Kuhad, who is the 2016 Artist of the Year for MTV India. He started releasing music with an EP in 2011. You are right now listening to Rat Razi, the title track to a 2013 EP. Today we're going to be talking about three songs from Tokens and Charms, an LP initially released in 2015, re-released in 2017. Those songs are Go, Oh Love, and Flames. We will then listen to a 2017 single in Hindi called Tum Jab Pass. And this interview is unusual in that I recorded it with him back in November of 2017. And by the time it was ready to release, I got a message from his people saying, can you wait until his new release comes out? That has now happened, so we recorded a quick addendum. So you'll also hear the title track to his brand new Cold Mess EP. If you want to learn more, check out PrateekKuhad.com. For more about this podcast, visit NakedlyExaminedMusic.com. And if you want to support what we're doing, I encourage you to go to patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. All right, so I will play a little of Rat Razi from the 2013 title track of the album of that name. We're going to focus today on your three songs from the Tokens and Charms album. So that was, I see, completed in 2015, but has had a more recent release with a few extra tracks on it. I see you went to school in NYU and then you moved to Delhi to become a full-time musician. So Did you start then? Were you just doing songs in both languages the whole time?
I became a full-time musician in 2012, 2013, which is when I moved back from New York to New Delhi. But before that, I was studying at NYU. So I was kind of doing music on the side and, you know, playing shows around the city in New York. I think I actually started writing in English. That was back then. The first EP that I put out was this three-track thing that we did back in 2011. And those are all English songs. But I think I was still learning and I'm not particularly proud of those songs. But I think the first real release that I did that, you know, I put a lot of effort into the songwriting and the production of was Rat Razi, which was in Hindi. So I started writing in Hindi later. English kind of came more naturally to me. I mean, a lot of people, especially in the US, might not know this, but a lot of Indians who grow up in, you know, bigger cities and go to private schools are actually almost better at English than Hindi, especially when it comes to like academically, you know, like in terms of like vernacular speaking on a regular day-to-day basis, like it's pretty much the same. But when it comes to actually writing in Hindi, like a lot of people are not as good because Hindi's people's vocabulary usually in Hindi won't be as good as in English because we're taught in English medium schools. We consume a lot of books in English and movies in English. So that's how I was at least. So writing in English came on actually. But then I was inspired by a really old Bollywood film and a whole era around the 50s and the 60s in India. The film industry and the music industry was very, there was a lot of really interesting stuff happening. And that's kind of inspired me to write in Hindi more. So the first legit release that I put out was Rat Razi, which was in 2013. But I kind of always wrote in English and Hindi both after that point. Like I was writing songs in both languages. And for me, it's not really about like the language at all. It's just more about, I mean, a song is a song, you know. I write to express myself and it's almost a catharsis of sorts and just kind of comes out. So I've always simultaneously written songs in both English and Hindi. I think in terms of volume, I wrote a lot more in English and I still write more in English, but I still write in Hindi.
Do you dream in English?
I don't dream that much. But every now and then when I do, it's kind of mixed. You know, sometimes it's in English, sometimes it's in Hindi. Same with my thoughts. Like even when you're kind of like thinking through things in your head. I mean, sometimes I'm thinking in Hindi, sometimes in English. I don't really know. I don't really keep track of what's more or less. But I think I'm like equally comfortable, most certainly, in both languages.
Well, Tokens and Charms is sonically very, very strong, very clear. Was there a bump in terms of production between the Rat Razi album and then you got discovered from that? And so Tokens and Charms is the full-on production or was it a more gradual thing?
Rat Razi was almost, I mean, I just started out that time. I didn't know a lot about production. That was the first time I really got in a studio and like tracked the album in a good studio with a decent engineer. We tracked that album in Delhi and then I went to New York and a friend of mine is a mix engineer and like we kind of both mixed it together in a studio in New York with, you know, a lot of good outboard gear. So I think Rat Razi really sounds good as well in terms of sonically, but production-wise, it's definitely like arrangement-wise, it's definitely a lot more minimal because I don't think I had any ideas. I mean, that's how we were performing those songs live. I played a trio. I still kind of, for the most part, play in a trio. And it was just bass, drums, and guitar. That's kind of how I was playing those songs. So we just decided to do it like that, keep it really simple. By the time it got to In Tokens and Charms, you know, it had been almost 2.5 years. And I don't know, I guess I'd just grown as a musician. I was thinking about the album a lot more. I was thinking about production and arrangement a lot more. And yeah, we did decide to take it to the next level as well. Just more musicians, more layers in the album. We actually, a couple of us flew down to Brooklyn and recorded it in somebody's home studio. I worked with two other engineers this time. So sonically, it sounds a lot more polished and a lot more grand in that sense compared to Rath Razi at least. But I think that was just sort of a natural progression in terms of how I grew as a musician and a production person, I guess.
Say something about the song Go, which is still very minimalist. It sort of reminds me of the Bob Dylan's Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, in terms of the initial riff, at least.
I think I wrote that song in early 2014. That whole album is pretty much to do with one relationship, and Go is kind of about that as well. A lot of people ask me about, like, whether it's, you know, the main line, which is like, if you go, I won't even know. If you leave, I won't even show it. I mean, it's, a lot of people ask me if it's sarcastic or if it's actually like, do you mean that? And I think it's kind of a bit of both, to be honest. A lot of the songs I write, I don't fully understand them till like much later. Sometimes I don't completely understand them myself. It's more of, my writing process is very, very intuitive. And Go is actually one of those songs I, for myself, haven't completely figured out myself. But at this point, I feel like it's kind of like the dual nature of the two sentiments behind that song. I mean, when you really love in somebody and love with somebody, and you kind of don't want them to leave because obviously you love them and you want them to be around. But at some point, you're also maybe a little egoistic and you're like, if you go, I don't really care. I think it's kind of about that conflict that people could have, which I definitely had at one point.
Don't leave me hanging sideways. We are drunk and driving highways, and our bodies are inclined to escape the morning light. You bring your hopes up with the sunrise, but our hearts lie someplace else. We are hidden behind these windowsills. We are hidden behind these sheets that never end. If you go, beautiful undercover, and our bodies were inclined. We are wasted in our youth, and we are spent and we are clueless. Did we question our souls? We are hidden behind these windowsills. We are hidden behind these sheets that never end. If you go,
that intro riff and that very Bob Dylan-esque, early Dylan-esque tone that I was referring to, it seems a little strange going with the actual lyrics that you start off with. The, we are drunk and driving highways, that it sounds like this kind of, you know, it should be an over the top rock and roll, you know, something, but it's very, a quiet little plaintive song at this point. So I like the mix of imagery there.
That song is a lot about like letting go. And to me, that line just came and it felt like, I know one of my closest friends who heard it kind of didn't like that particular line. It's funny you bring that up because she's one of my friends I really like bounce a lot of ideas off, or at least like always give like the first draft. And I'm always like keen to hear her suggestions. And it kind of sticks out in that song because I think that's the only song which is a bit like, it's supposed to show like the really carefree, liberated feeling of what that line says. You know, I just kind of want like the listener to feel, you know, drunk and driving highways, even though that's a terrible thing to do. It's a terrible idea. I don't suggest anybody ever does it. But it's just about being able to literally do what you want without really thinking about the consequences at all, and how that sentiment fits in the rest of the song.
Yeah, and the drunkenness sort of fits with the, did we question our souls later? We are spent and we are clueless. So that it seems like it's putting this as a predominantly physical relationship, which I think a lot of people can identify with.
Yeah. I mean, once again, it's just like, the song is a lot about like dichotomy and conflict. So a lot of times, like, you might think it's predominantly physical, but there's always like moments when it's really emotional and moments when it's not, and you're confused and you're not really sure. That's why it kind of switches also, the song, from like verses where it's really dark, almost goes into a dark place, to a point where it's like this plea, which is like, if you go, it's really painful to see you go.
It's a very dramatic shift between the verses and the chorus there. I mean, that you have this, what, six counts of silence, this big dramatic pause that I sort of expect, you know, just to maybe put at the very end of a song, like, okay, you think we're done and now we're going to do an extra chorus. That's where I would, but no, it's right there, right before the first chorus. You've got this huge, giant pause where you can hear the guitar amp noise kind of filling up the space. It's great.
Yeah, I kind of do that live as well, actually. A lot of times, like, it's really interesting to play that song live because, you know, I'd be playing like a bunch of other songs in my set, which are really loud and people are like, you know, singing along and shouting. And then like this song comes and everybody quietens down a little bit. And then when that pause comes, a lot of times I give it a really long pause, and it's really cool because people just wait because they're all waiting for the chorus to come in. And like, sometimes I'll give it like a good 10 seconds and just wait on stage and it's just complete silence in the whole, wherever I'm playing, in the club or like at a festival. It's really cool.
And I find myself, you know, having listened to your Hindi songs as well, looking for traces of whether Indian pop music or something, you know, it very much sounds Western. I guess the only place I was detecting it is in some of the vocal articulations. So there's a lot of staccato. And this song, it's, we are hidden behind these windowsill, that you've got a lot of very choppy, although interestingly extending that window instead of just these windows, you know, that you make an exception there. I mean, is that just the idiosyncratic way that you sing, or am I picking up that this is a part of the Indian pop music influence here?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, this is the first time I'm even thinking about what you just said right now. I mean, I've never noticed that about my, I'm more of a songwriter. Like, I'm a words person. I put a lot of thought and effort into my words. And when it comes to actually delivering them, in terms of like, even melodies are like almost secondary to me in terms of importance in a song, personally. Even when it comes to delivering them, I sing like very intuitively. I don't know, I've just heard a bunch of music over the years, and it's not just Indian pop music, it's like Indian classical music and like Western classical music, a lot of folk music from America, like Americana, a lot of Woody Guthrie, a lot of like contemporary folk artists like Elliot Smith and Nick Drake, and a lot of rock music. Like, I was a huge Led Zeppelin fan. So I don't know, I guess like my influences have been really varied always. I've never really paid much heed to my vocal delivery style. I just kind of like sing it how it goes. I guess that just really happened naturally. I never thought about the staccato continuing thing. I wish I could tell you where that came from.
Well, I thought originally when I was listening to just your new album that was, as you're saying, that you're a songwriter in the tradition of Bob Dylan. In other words, focusing on the lyrics, not an American Idol style vocalist. That's not what it's about. It's supposed to be more honest, more direct than that.
Right.
But then I hear this Udi that you did with Sanjay Divecha, where you're doing the chale, chale, where you're like doing the vocal fluttering.
So that's not actually my song. That's a song I sang for that film. So it was written, and so the way it happens in the Indian film industry is that like composers write a song, and there's a lyricist who writes the words, and then they have a song ready with a tune and words, and then they get somebody to come in and just sing it. So I literally just sang it. So that melody was literally like, every time I deviated from the melody the composers had given me, I'd be asked to like, okay, you got to sing exactly that. So that's literally like,
okay,
just me singing out the melody the way I was asked to. If it was up to me, I probably wouldn't have sung it like that at all.
All right. Well, just the fact that you can do that, that's not a natural thing.
I
think for most Western, I can't do that easily. And it would certainly sound weird if we are hidden behind these windowsills. Like, even that just would be a strange thing to the ear here. Now, the arrangement is still very minimal on this song in particular, on Oh Love that we're going to listen to next, and Flame, it's a little less so. But I mean, like these drums, it's a very stripped down drum part. I would have guessed that this was you playing the drums, or this is your regular drummer, right?
It's my regular drummer. On Oh Love, right?
Well, on we're still talking about Go.
All the songs, the whole album was like my drummer, who I still work with right now.
He's very, very restrained. It's not until the very end of the song, if you leave, I won't even show it. That's like the first time there's two snare hits in a row in the whole song. There's no fills. He's just playing. And I think that helps a lot because this chorus, it has a very 50s, that progression. Do, 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 do. But it doesn't sound like that because you're doing it slower once, and there's no obvious eighth notes in the whole thing. There's no hi-hat holding that. It's just very mirroring what I was saying about the vocals, the vocals being so staccato that even the music here is just very one hit and then not stretched out or filling in the spaces.
Yeah, no, I was just saying in terms of like the arrangement and stuff, like we consciously decided to keep it that way because I just wanted the end to be like really, really dramatic. I mean, for me, like production and arrangement has always been like, I follow minimalism in general as a philosophy in life. And I feel like I don't like adding any production elements on any parts or anything that is just not absolutely essential. And I feel like a lot of times also when you like really leave gaps in a song, then like it makes like the dramatic parts substantially more dramatic and really like showcases those parts. With this song, I mean, it's a really simple structure, right? There's no bridge, there's nothing. It's just like two verses, chorus, like really super simple. So for something like that to just make it sound really big at the end, I guess we just intuitively like ended up just having really big drums only at the end. I think that kind of worked for the song.
Well, and leaving those spaces, again, like in that first space, you can hear the guitar fades out and you can hear the amp noise. In the second, at the end of the chorus, you have another silence before the verse comes in. And strangely enough, there's the sound of a ringing cymbal that wasn't actually in the chorus. So it sounds like that you had the chorus and had drums in that part of the chorus and then just muted them. But then after you know, I won't even show it now, which is the one thing that offbeat now is the one thing that kind of, you know, makes it not like that 50s progression that I was talking about. But then after the now, there's this silence and you can hear fading in this cymbal, this noise that was not in there before. So
I did try to be alive.
So that's just, it sounds like an accident of the recording.
Maybe it's like one of those like glitches that happens, like one little track left somewhere that like got in, because I've never noticed that. Like for me, I mean, I think like after the first chorus, there's just silence and it goes straight into the verse. But I'm going to listen out for what you just said again. It's been a while, that album, you know, we made this like 3 years ago.
Sure. Well, I like the fact that there is something in those silences that it's not a full digital silence, mm-hmm. because you could easily just grab that and mute there. And that's a very, maybe more dramatic when things come back in if you've done that, but it's weird. It doesn't sound like you're in the room with people anymore.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there was like you said, the amp noise and so, but that's again, we don't really do that consciously. It's just about what sounded right, you know, like, I mean, when we were tracking the album, like when we heard it, like that gap sounded fine. And that was just about it. There were like five of us in the room and it didn't stick out as weird or awkward to everybody. In fact, I think it felt kind of natural to have that gap.
Yeah. So was there just cello in here? Was there violin or something? There's some high harmonic I hear like in the pre-chorus, the first time we are hidden, that you have like a piano that comes in and just plays one chord and then it's gone. Just one chord. And then it sounds like there's a violin that echoes the cello just for one note and then also is gone.
We are hidden behind these windows.
Is that actually happening or am I hallucinating that?
So yeah, no, there's definitely a violin and cello both. We just mixed it like really more as a layer, like a really subtle layer. Uh-huh. So we had like violin and cello parts both throughout the song, which comes in the verses and the choruses actually. It goes in and out. That piano note was, yeah, that was just something I wanted to do. I don't really know why. Felt like that was like an important moment in the song where it's like, we are hidden. And like, I put it in the first chorus and then I was like, you know, I don't think I want to put it again. I don't know. It just felt like that's all where it belonged. So there's literally that one piano note that comes in. But in terms of the cello and the violin, like there definitely is a violin in there, but it's just all really subtle and we mixed it in like that, which is why it's not very obvious that there's a violin in there, because I didn't really want like really bright, shiny violin notes. I wanted it more like as a bed, as a layer of like tones, which has ended up sounding like pretty much in the background in that sense.
Yeah, well, that kind of follows on the, you mentioned Nick Drake before, that, I mean, not that he necessarily mixed things that low, but I just think of his music as having this warm, dark tone that you don't get if you put hi-hat on anything or if you put, you know, really pointy violin on anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's introduce Oh Love. Go was a fast electric finger pick thing. We actually get to acoustic here. Do you want to give a little introduction to Oh Love before we play it?
Olaf's the first track of In Tokens and Charms, and it ended up being like one of the most popular songs of the album in terms of just how many people knew it. And, you know, its song is really like easy to sing along with. And I always get that at shows that I play. And I think even before we actually started producing the album, I remember one of the people I worked with, Chris, he said that like, this is the song that's going to like really get this album attention.
Don't worry about me, I've got another hour so to kill. Don't worry about me, I'll find another place to begin. It's overdone, have faith, have patience. My life to know which hurt, the rest is yet to come. Oh, it's time. Oh, love, be mine. No, go slow. So high, so low. Don't worry about me, I'll fake another trip to reverie. Don't worry about me, I've got a million tricks up my sleeve. We'll never know how near, how far can this go. So don't you fret, my dear, by now you should know. Oh, it's time. Oh, love, be mine. Behold these eyes. Olaf, it's time. Behold these eyes, there's a fire that burns inside my soul, to feign another sight. It's time to make up your mind. Don't waste time. Oh, love, be mine. Oh, love, be mine. Oh, love, be mine. Be mine.
Yeah, so this is another nice soft acoustic one, but not plaintive at all. It's more sitting out on a sunny day kind of song. So you say this is about the same relationship?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was in a really long relationship. It lasted almost like 6 years, and this album was written just around the time it kind of was ending or about to end. So, you know, a lot of emotions. And Oh Love is more, I mean, it's definitely possibly like the happiest song on the album. A lot of songs, like, you know, on my album and in general that I write and produce sound happy in terms of sonically and production wise. But when you actually listen to the lyrics, it's not necessarily a happy song. So Oh Love is, I wouldn't call Oh Love a happy song in terms of the words, but it's definitely hopeful. I mean, there are parts in the song where it gets a little melancholic and nostalgic, but it kind of ends on a hopeful note that, you know, that things are going to work out. That's kind of like the vibe of the song.
It's strange that it's "Don't worry about me," and it sounds like it's the, you know, it's okay that we're breaking up. Don't worry, it's fine. But then you immediately know it's time, oh love, be mine. We're still in the relationship. How does the juxtaposition between those two things work?
So I don't think it's really like about that we're breaking up, but it's more about like just literally the fact that, like, you know, I'm not getting enough attention, but that's cool. It's kind of like that. Like, don't worry about me. I've got another hour or so to kill. Like, I'm just waiting around. And when you go to the next verse, it becomes a little bit more hopeful, where it becomes like, don't worry about me. I've got a million tricks up my sleeves. So it's kind of getting in more into the vibe of like, you know, yeah, maybe we can make this work.
Okay, that actually makes it quite different, that that first line, don't worry about me, I've got another hour or so to kill, that sort of sounds, although it would be strange wording to interpret it this way, that it's I have time to spend with you, but no, it's I have time to wait while you don't show up yet, or something like that.
Yeah, that's actually what I at least meant with that line.
I'll fake another trip to reverie. Do you want to decode that line? I'll fake another trip to reverie. What does that mean?
The first paragraph is more like, it's almost complaining. The first verse, sorry, which is like, I've got another hour or so to kill. I'll find another place to begin. And then when you go to the second paragraph, it becomes the second verse. It becomes a little bit more dreamy, a little bit more fantastical, and just a bit more hopeful, a little bit more positive. I'll fake another trip to reverie is just, it's more of like imagery. I don't necessarily, I mean, it doesn't have to be taken like literally, but it's just about like the feeling. And those two lines kind of go together, you know, I'll fake another trip to reverie and like, I've got a million tricks up my sleeves. It's a bit magical, sort of like almost saying I can fix this with magic, or I'm almost like a magician.
Well, yeah, and how that matches up to in the third verse, behold these eyes, there's a fire that burns inside my soul. Go feign another side. Another side of you tonight is for another time. Yeah, so what is the feigning another side? How does that, because that sounds like, usually the third verse is where the audience gets to find out what the song's actually about. And it does get more direct.
I mean, I don't know what usually the third verse is and stuff, but honestly, like, this is actually the bridge. This is kind of like the bridge of the song, because this is where the song like really picks up and becomes really huge. And it's like, behold these eyes, there's a fire that burns.
Oh, sure. Yes. I called it chorus two. Okay. So it's the where you actually start strumming.
Yeah, exactly. So when I actually start strumming and the song becomes really big, the bridge is where like it becomes like, behold these eyes, there's a fire that burns inside my soul. There were like two things about these lines. Like, one was, I kind of like wrote it one just as a, I mean, I won't call it a trick, but just something interesting. Like, the every line kind of like leads into another, but also works for the previous line. So if you don't read it and actually listen to it, it's like, behold these eyes, there's a fire that burns inside my soul. And then after that, it's like, go feign another side of you tonight, but tonight is for another time. So it kind of all leads into each other. And I know you said that conventionally, maybe the bridge is supposed to like resolve or something, but I mean, I guess I just didn't do that because the relationship didn't actually work. So the song was really like up and down. And I guess when I wrote it, it was more like you get hopeful, but towards the bridge, it's like, okay, is it actually really even working out? Because tonight is for another time.
Well, and just getting dramatic in that way, the behold these eyes, that it's almost, if it is stating more literally what the song is about, it's about, you know, I'm an interesting person, why don't you pay more attention to me, or something like that, that you're really getting dramatic.
So when I say behold these eyes, I'm actually talking about like the girl. So it's like, you know, like, look at her eyes. It's kind of like continuation from the previous line where it's like, oh love, be mine. And then It's behold these eyes, which is like kind of like saying it out to the world that like, look at her. And then back to like, oh love, be mine. And then it kind of, the bridge starts with like, just behold these eyes, which is like, again, just talking about her, you know, then talking about me, which is like, there's a fire that burns inside my soul, which is like, you know, it kind of connects when you say it, like, somebody's so beautiful and it makes a fire burn inside my soul.
So I think on Go, you used a double-tracked vocal. Is that right? Whereas on Oh Love, it's more exposed, at least until you get to the big part.
Yeah, correct.
And then when you do get to the super chorus, about 2¾ minutes in, where you jump up an octave, you've got doubled vocals there. And on the second line, you have, you know, you mostly stay exactly with yourself. But then instead of having a whole harmony, I think it's just like one note that you move apart from yourself. So it creates that little tiny instant harmony and then it goes away immediately. Was that just another thing that happened when you were recording and you thought it was cool and left it?
That was probably just an accident. I mean, I was actually just doing double vocals, you know, but like every take is slightly different. So there might have been like a note here and there which was sung differently, which still kind of worked. So I left it there. Again, you know, I mean, we tracked this such a long time ago. I don't remember exactly what happened on this song. But yeah, we did a lot of like just playing around with how different voice textures sounded. With Go, like double tracking really worked because I remember like Go was a really difficult song for me to execute in terms of like vocal delivery. And I must have done like 50 takes for the song and none of us were happy with it. And then finally, one day my engineer was like, just like, put two tracks together and kind of blended them in. And I was like, oh shit, that sounds really good now. Like it just had a lot more depth and a lot more like richness. So that really worked for that. But for Oh Love, like we didn't need that. Like throughout the song, just having like a single track worked really well for the vocals. And for the chorus, just to make it really big, I just added like, I didn't really want to add harmonies because the line is so straight. Like it's not really like even moving so much melodically. It's just like, oh love, be mine. You know, it's just really straight. So it didn't really feel like you could do any harmonies, but I just wanted to make it vocally richer. So we just added a bunch of like double tracks towards the end.
Now, even the main guitar riff, which is a nice, you know, it's not a finger picking thing like before. It's got the little moving bits that diddle diddle.
Don't worry about me. I've got another hour so to kill. Don't worry about me.
Now, is that doubled as well? It sounds like you're playing again in unison with yourself, but then in a couple places, oh, it's time, oh, love, be mine. Then the two guitars split apart and do something slightly different. So they're harmonizing at that point.
I was like really influenced by Elliott Smith. And if you listen to his music, he does that a lot. Like just in terms of using like two completely different guitar parts sometimes through a lot of the songs and just two things are happening. And even with his vocals, that happens a lot. Sometimes a lot of his like main like lead vocals is two different tracks playing left and right. Sometimes they'll be slightly different, and it's not like I was trying to do what Elliot Smith did, but just, I mean, we just wanted to make everything richer. I don't know if you noticed, but like this song doesn't have a bass guitar. It doesn't have any bass in it. That's just how I used to play it live, and I wanted to make it sound as big in the studio as possible. So we just added a bunch of like acoustic guitars just to give it that kind of fullness and that richness. And we really worked on the drum tones a lot. Again, a lot of the kicks and the tom hits are also actually double track. They're actually like three different toms played on top of each other, and just to like give it a lot of meat. So a lot of the song is like that, that particular song at least, especially. So in the verses, like it's pretty much just two guitars left and right, which is that kind of picking pattern that I do for the intro riff. And then towards the end, I'm actually in the choruses, in the last chorus, I'm actually playing like two different things, slightly different things. Like one is like just the regular intro riff that I play, like strummed, and the other is like a variation of that. So if you listen closely, you can hear it like being slightly different. And then there's additionally like a center guitar as well, which is doing something else. They all together just like kind of mush into and like sound like really just really rich.
Yeah, especially that bridge, you add an extra high guitar or something, or added some extra effects to, you know, there's definitely some higher harmonics coming out during that part.
It's just played a lot higher on the fretboard. There was no effects at all. That song is like completely acoustic, actually, in that sense. Like we didn't really use any like delays or like weird plugins or storm boxes. I mean, all we did was just like different. And I do this a lot with my guitars in general. I'm actually not a very good guitar player. I'm like decent, but what I like doing is just like placing my capos on different parts of the fretboard and playing the same chords, which is like really simple to do. But if you play like a 1-4-5 pattern on an open guitar, and then you put, you know, your capo on the 7th fret and then play like that same chord pattern, but, you know, in a C formation. And when you play those tracks together, it just makes the whole guitar part a lot richer. That's something I do a lot with my guitars. Like I'll play really simple stuff, but I'll just play it on different parts of the fretboard. The chords are the same, but and the notes are all, a lot of times the same, but they're just like slightly different in different ways. So it adds a lot of depth to the guitars, which is kind of what I did a lot on Olav.
I mean, there's not a huge amount of effect on the vocals or the guitar, but when people use these non-standard, you know, non-drum kit, actually even with regular drums, of course, you kind of need to put a lot of reverb or do something with them, or record in a really nice room, or else it just sounds like garbage. And you have these claps, and what is it? Are they finger cymbals, or what's going on here in the, before you've got the full drum kit? You've got a few, some occasional big tom hits, as you mentioned, that were double tracked, I guess. Is that finger cymbal, or what's making the little
the like stick noises?
Some kind of clap noise.
My dear, by now you should know. Oh, it's time.
I'm not 100% sure, but it's either just like literally two drumsticks played on top, like just two drumsticks played together, and you know, we just tracked a bunch of those, or it might be like rim hits. It was these like slightly thicker sticks that were lying around the studio, and my drummer just kind of like played them on top of each other. It sounded cool. And obviously we EQ'd it a bunch, so it was not exactly how it sounded acoustic. It's not really like produced in that sense. I mean, it was recorded and then like EQ'd a little bit and then put it in there.
Okay, so even those, it's a matter of EQing them and placing them the right place in the mix rather than putting a giant reverb on it to make it create its own little atmosphere.
We did actually record in a really good drum room. The drum room had like really high, like, you know, almost like 30 feet ceilings. So I think that really helped a lot. And plus we really worked on the drum sounds. Like I said, like the kick actually had like two separate skins in front of it. So we were getting like subs separately from one mic, and like there was a mic inside the drum, kick drum, and one like outside it. So there were like three drum mics coming in just for the kick. There was a bunch of more mics in there. The room was really nice. Plus we actually had in that studio a real plate reverb, an actual big box. And I think that really helped a lot. Like a lot of the reverb used on the record is from an actual plate and not a plug-in. And we also had a spring reverb box actually. So a lot of the reverb we used was like actually boxes, which I don't know. I think these little things like really add sonically to the album overall in terms of just giving it like a bigger sound.
Well, let's introduce our third song, Flames, which I think is the biggest production of the three, that you've got electric guitar with delay on it, playing a very prominent role right at the beginning. And then I just thought it was very interesting that you had the first chorus, that guitar is not on it, but then when it comes back, the chorus comes back the second time, that intro riff is on top of it. So it really doubles the density of that chorus gives a completely different feel the first time it comes in from the second, just by reintroducing that one delayed guitar there.
I think Flames was like one of the most important songs for me on the album. I still kind of think of it like as one of the most personal song I've ever written. Although all of them are like really personal, but this one just like always stuck out to me. And it's one of the few songs that I'm actually a little bit proud of. Because in general, I feel like I still have a long way to go as a songwriter, and I'm still learning, I'm still getting better. But at some level, I definitely feel proud of Flames. Even as a production, like, it was the most challenging song for sure. In terms of, because it's a bigger production, tracking it was a challenge, and mixing it was like a real challenge. Like, we did a lot of back and forth on Flames. I'm pretty happy with how it turned out, so it was all worth it.
My only find is you, and all my time is you.
So yeah, the overall sound of this is very much more in the Coldplay sort of area than Elliott Smith, that I feel like this could be the radio hit. I don't know.
That would be amazing.
Say a little about how you're marketing this and, you know, the fact that you re-released it with extra tracks a couple years later. I saw you, you know, won a major award in India, this MTV Artist of the Year for 2016. So now is the strategy now that you're trying to release these same songs in America and trying to break big here? Or what is the strategy here?
There was a couple of reasons. One was that we wanted to do an LP, which we just did. So a big reason why we decided to do the deluxe season was because I wanted to put the song on vinyl. It's something I always wanted to do, but it's something we could only finally afford around now. Because like you said, with the MTV EMA and a bunch of things that happened, things have picked up this year. We're touring a lot. We're doing fairly decently, at least in India. I really wanted to put out a vinyl because I listen to a lot of vinyl. It started from there, and then, you know, we decided to, like, it's also been a while since I put out a whole album. So I thought it'd be a nice thing to do for the fans in general. Plus, one of the songs that's on there didn't make the cut of the original album. It's called Big Surprise. It's one of the four new songs that I added to the original In Tokens and Charms track listing for the deluxe. It just didn't make the cut. I mean, when we actually recorded 11 songs for the album initially, and 12, sorry, including Tonight. And both Tonight we ended up including as a secret track on the CD. So it was actually only on the audio CDs, and it just sort of played up. It was not on the track listing. And Big Surprise, we just completely cut off because all of us felt it didn't fit the overall. It kind of like stuck out to a lot of us. And the 10 songs that were there on the track listing just worked really well together cohesively in terms of sound and just the meaning behind various other factors. But, you know, Big Surprise was still a really great song and I really wanted to release it. So that was another reason. It just gave us the opportunity to put a lot of these older songs out that we hadn't officially released. Tonight had been on my SoundCloud for a while, but not really out there. Partly the reason was also to give it an extra push in the US and the overseas markets in general outside of India, because we mostly spend all our marketing efforts the first time around pushing In Tokens and Charms in India. I mean, I was in the US all summer this year, and I plan to be again next year. And we're going to London actually like next week to kind of promote this album and just in general my songs. So yeah, I thought it could potentially help with that as well. So there's many reasons.
So you're not bored of these songs yet since this album is 2 years old? And I you know, I've heard more recent stuff of yours in English on YouTube. That sounds great.
I'm definitely really bored of playing these. Not bored, but you know, you kind of get like a little sick of playing them live. So the live set that I play these days has only like two or three songs from this album. Most of them are actually new. Yeah, so like I said, like, this is not really about, like, I don't intend this to be an actual new release. It's more of like a vinyl release. Like, the main reason to do it was actually to put the album on vinyl. And I thought if we're putting it on vinyl, we might as well like add a couple of nice surprises inside.
Well, one of the great tracks added for the vinyl was this piano version of Flames.
All the flames that did fade, truth be told, all our dreams are sold, and all the fireplay we hate, all the flames that did fade, and true to my game, I did hope it would change. For my pride is you, my only find is you, and all my time is you.
I mean, was that recorded later? Was that something that came out of a, you know, reapproaching it? You had the main recording down and then you're reapproaching it on a different instrument, you know, completely different. Or was this something, you know, worked up for live performance? Or what's the story with the two versions of that?
So the initial, like, the original Flames recording is like totally different, as you know, you can tell. I think about an year and a half ago, I did a live video. I like releasing like live videos, just like simple, like voice and instrument videos, or maybe with like one more percussionist now and then, just for online content. And I started actually learning the piano only about 2 years ago. And one of the first songs I learned how to play properly, one of the first songs of my own that I learned how to play properly was Flame. So I kind of started playing it on the piano, and I was just learning the piano, and I liked it. I thought it sounded nice on the piano. It sounded really different, but it had, you know, it still had a nice vibe. So we did a live video for it. We put it out. A lot of people really liked it. And I started liking the piano version so much more that we completely switched to playing it only on the piano live. So now, actually, these days, every time I play Flames live, it's just on the piano. I have some additional production with my drummer and my bassist for the live version, but like it's pretty much on the piano. So this has been happening for the past year and a half. And then earlier this year, when we decided to do the deluxe release, I thought another nice addition would be to have the piano version of Flames, just because I've been playing it live so much. We have a version online of it. So I actually recorded this earlier this summer in, I think, July at a studio in LA.
Well, let's talk about the full version that they actually heard, the original version of Flames, a little more before we finish up with this song. So again, say something about this, the textures that you start out with, the fast delayed guitar thing. In fact, you know, you've got a full, fairly long intro, and then it stops, and you expect the vocal to come in at about 36 seconds in here. But no, it actually just plays a second intro, which is just your acoustic with low, low percussion, very occasional light drum hit, just sitting on the same chord to kind of establish this bass line before the vocals come in. You've got two intros there. You know, it's like the first one is giving a preview of what's eventually going to come in on what, the second chorus, somewhere very later in the song.
Just kind of how the song evolved. We used to play that song live just with acoustic, electric, and drums. That's it. I just remember really wanting the intro, and when the chorus comes back in, especially when the chorus comes back in, I wanted that part to sound really, really big. And I remember like we struggled a lot with that in the studio, just in terms of like it coming back in and not sounding as prominent. And I think what we did was actually turn up the level of the entire mix from that point, like by like 2 or 3 dBs, to just make it really impactful and like the whole band comes back in again. Again, like I said, I don't really consciously plan the arrangement and the progression of my songs. It just kind of happened naturally. The first time I ever recorded this song was actually it started with just the acoustic intro. The first time I wrote this song, which was in 2014, it started with just the acoustic part going like ding, 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 you know, like just strumming, yeah. And then me coming in with like cold feet. And at some point, I decided to add the big chorus, which comes in later as the intro. And then the song became that, because I felt like, I don't know, at some point I felt like it would be really cool to have it start really big and then come back down to like the bare bone acoustic and then kind of blow up again. I remember like saying a lot that I wanted like it to feel like fireworks. I don't know, in terms of just flames and just, it's a lot about like a relationship that's really, really intense. And I wanted like the intro to convey that intensity. And the way it was starting earlier with just the acoustic, it wasn't dramatic enough. And which is why I added that first like long intro on the electric guitar.
And we've had cello on all three of these songs. When you play with cello, are you more or less dictating notes, or are you just telling the cello player, okay, do what seems natural, and then just giving feedback from there? No, you know, drop out that part, whatever.
Yeah, mostly the latter. I'm not like a trained musician at all. I can't even read like notes or like staff notation or anything. But with these songs, what I actually did was like, I used to work with a violinist when I was in college in New York. A lot of the shows that I played live was with another violinist, and we used to do like duo sets, or just like me on the acoustic and him playing the violin and just kind of, you know, harmonizing with me. And so I'd kind of known this guy from back then. His name was Danny. So when this album came along, I just called him up and I said that, you know, do you want to play on my record? And I also need a cellist. Do you know anybody? And he put me in touch with this another brilliant cello player, Jacob Cohen. Before we actually got in the studio to track the songs, we met and like just rehearsed them for a couple of hours and just kind of like broadly got the parts down and where I want them to play and things like that. But yeah, I was primarily like just kind of like jamming with them, you know, just sitting together in a room, figuring out what works, what doesn't, and then actually going ahead and like tracking them and directing them in terms of like, okay, that part works, that doesn't work. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I think it's entirely normal for guitar players, folk-based guitar players, to not start by reading music. It was actually my son started lessons, you know, several years ago and just wanted to learn that kind of guitar. And the teacher insisted on like, no, we're going to go through the Mel Bay book where you're reading off sheet music. And that didn't really take. It didn't really work. We aborted lessons after a little while and had to, it's only, coming back to it a couple of years later with a more normal rock background. I don't know. It seems easier to start making your own music faster if you are bumbling around rather than if you're reading music and then you kind of feel like that's the musician's job is to play what's on the page. That there's some, I don't think it's an accident that a lot of times when, you do get a cello player or something like that in, that, just play something. They maybe don't even know how to do that. It's just a totally different approach.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of like the same thing happened with me. The first time I actually started learning the guitar was with a teacher, and like he tried to teach me like conventional way, like, with like notes and like scales and things like that, and it just didn't work. And the next time I met a teacher who taught me in a really different way, which was just basically just like learning how to play like simple chords to a song. I didn't even have to like, took me like a month to get really into it. I stopped even going to him, and post that point, I was just learning the guitar on my own, because once you start playing songs and make like a little bit of a progress, then it gets more exciting. And like the problem with like learning scales and a lot of like really technical stuff is unless you're like really, really committed and really, really focused, which I'm not that disciplined, it's a lot harder to learn the technicalities of a guitar because it gets really complex.
Yeah, learning to play the top and bottom staff, that a lot of good, really good trained guitarists, they can play basically piano music because they're using their thumb for the bottom. And that's a whole different level than very fast finger picking kind of thing, which is just a matter of sitting down with the guitar by yourself and kind of just working out something that feels good and doing it for 8 hours in a row until it seems natural.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. It actually didn't take a lot of time to learn it. It took like a couple of weeks, but yeah, I think like not even a couple of weeks, maybe like a week or two till I got better. But like I was just covering songs that played in that style a lot during that period. And I just played a lot of songs in like folk finger style. And I would just play like 6 hours a day. And at some point it became like really comfortable.
And you discover things, when you're messing around with your fingers a lot. So just the fact that you've got sometimes in the chorus, my only find is you. And then on the you jump from a major to a minor seventh. So it's kind of like a little thing like that that makes it so that it's worth the fact that you repeated the chorus. These choruses are fairly slow. And though they're rich and warm, I think there's always a risk in this kind of music of overstaying your welcome, of just repeating the slow thing a little too often. But if you just throw in a little bit of harmonic variation, then okay, that's worth it. You added in the one extra low dissonant note or something, and it just gives it an extra warmth or emotionality.
I write all my songs like really bare bones to start with. So, I mean, when the song was actually written, it was just literally on an acoustic guitar and vocals. And I feel like an advantage of like writing songs like that versus, getting ahead of yourself. And a lot of people, I feel like, start thinking of the production and like 5 steps ahead before even the song is complete. I spend a lot of time with my songs in the initial phase with just voice and one instrument. And sometimes if things are feeling like draggy or like, as you said, overstaying their welcome, it kind of becomes quite apparent when you're just singing it just on a piano or voice or just guitar and voice. You can kind of tell the parts which are draggy. So, and like you said, even if you put like one minor variation in a chord or something simple, it just kind of flows a lot better and makes sense for the listener.
So I found, I used to write exclusively the way you're talking about, that it can work just with solo guitar or solo piano and voice. But then after playing with a band for a while, then I would be like, I want to give them room to jam. So I'm going to write sections in these songs where I'm being a little more basic on my rhythm parts just to give them room to jump around. But then, years later, that particular band where the song was introduced is broken up and you want to play it solo again, then you almost have to rewrite it from scratch and add, little interesting things to the guitar part, because it's just, I'm playing these songs and it's not interesting enough. I'm hearing the lead guitar part or the spastic bass part or whatever, and it's not there anymore. And so it has to, become something different. So it's kind of good if it just starts interesting in the first place.
Yeah, for sure. And with me, like, it wasn't even like a conscious thing. I just like never really played with a band for that long. The only time I was in a band was in school for like a few months. And when I actually started songwriting in college, I just always wrote songs alone. So I was always just trying to make the songs that I write sound good on just guitar and vocals. So even the guitar parts that I added and stuff would just be a part of this, you know, the solo acoustic version as well. So all my songs, if you strip them down and just like play them on a guitar and voice, like they're going to sound, you know, almost the same. They're not going to sound different.
Well, this is the first one, Flames, of the three that we played today, that like the drum part is interesting by itself to play. That it's not just that it's not being as restrained that he's playing this. I don't know what the names of the rhythms are. You know, this, even though it's mixed pretty low, like it's a, you know, a more constant, a more obviously professional drum part than we've heard on the other two, which were just a little more minimalist.
I guess the song just asked for it. My drummer is like a really, really talented drummer. And I mean, you said like I could have played it, and like a lot of the stuff that he plays, he consciously decides to keep it minimal, because I think he comes from a background where it's more about the song than about the parts themselves. And certain songs ask for really, really complex arrangements and other songs don't. So it just kind of depends on the song. A lot of the newer songs that we're doing these days have like really complicated drum parts, and a lot of the other ones don't. You know, they have like really simple, like just like a kick drum or just like really basic parts. And with Flames, again, like the point was to make it really, really grand and really, really dramatic and really intense. Intense would be the word actually more than anything else. And those parts just worked in making it sound really intense.
There's more of a precedence as a folk artist, you know, that you are basically a solo artist. Even if you're playing with a band, it's under your name. And that's a normal thing. Whereas in rock, you know, and your stuff is, of course, right kind of on the edge of folk and rock, that usually, even if you've written a lot of songs, you kind of have to start at least in a band, and you probably don't name it after yourself because that sounds egotistical. You know, if you don't have a record label yet or something, then it starts out at least as more of a group project, where unless you have a very rare, very restrained drummer, restrained bassist, then they're probably going to overplay. It's going to be, you know, like the Police or something, you know, one of those bands where the rhythm section is actually most like a power trio, the Who you're talking about. But the fact that you know, you're started as, you can do gigs by yourself. You don't need the drummer. You can build enough of your name and enough of your, the ability to pay somebody to come in and be a side man and sort of stay in their spot is a nice thing to have attained early on, I think.
I mean, what you said is absolutely correct. I mean, I still play a lot of like band sets, but I guess the difference between like a rock band and me is that I write all my songs beforehand. I've never really like sat in a room with everybody and like written a song from scratch. I always have my songs ready. I always have a certain bit of a vision in terms of arrangement and production and what I wanted to flow like and what I wanted to feel like to the listener. And then I bring my drummer and my bassist in, give the general idea of what I want, and they'll try to like translate that. So that's how it's different, because I feel like with bands, a lot of songwriting happens in the room while you're jamming.
Yeah. You don't even have a lead instrument that's not you. The guitar is taking up enough space that it's not you playing a rhythm part and then a very prominent electric guitarist or piano player or something who inevitably, even if they're not credited with songwriting, is coming up with significant melodic elements to add over. You know, either that or you're dictating exactly what they do and then they're probably not happy with that.
Yeah, correct. There's no melodic element actually other than the voice. Like none of my songs really have a solo in that sense. I mean, there's like some guitar parts, but they're just mostly like picked and like more to add like texture and like vibe to the song versus actually a solo, because I can't actually play a solo. I wouldn't know how to.
I saw some stuff of you on YouTube where you're playing electric and I was watching the Jimi Hendrix trio where you're, it sounded impressive enough. I think it was My Heart is a Mess. That was the song.
Oh yeah. That's like one of the few songs where I do a bit of like, it's really simple though. If you actually got down to playing it, it's like super simple. I'm not really doing anything complicated at all. But I know what you mean when it kind of sounds like Hendrix. I mean, it's a lot of like, Hendrix does a lot of like solo / chords. Like it's like a mix. It's like he's playing chords, but he's also kind of like soloing with it. It's not really like completely melodic. It's kind of harmonic, kind of melodic. And the whole song, Cold Mess, is kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you're playing in a three-piece, I mean, you kind of have to do that or else it just sounds very bare. When you get to the solo part and you want to pull out your Eric Clapton or whatever, like, no, there's nothing. You need a rhythm player if you're going to do that. Thanks so much for doing this. I think we have a good picture of your current, at least as of 2014, 2015 approach. To close out here, we wanted to play a 2017 single, Tum Jab Pass. So we have finally one in Hindi. Do you want to just tell us a little about that before we go?
So far, all the songs I've written have been about like some relationship, and this is about a girl I was seeing last year. And it says Tum Jab Pass means, in English, it means when you come close to me. That's the literal translation. And that's kind of about the feeling of what happens to a person when, you know, the person they love comes closer.
As a special late-breaking add-on to this episode, we're going to play a bonus song right off the presses, which is the title track to Pratik's brand new Cold/Mess EP. Pratik, why don't you give us a few introductory words about this project before we say goodbye?
Since we last spoke, I was in the studio earlier this year in Nashville, and we worked on tracking these 6 songs, which just got released as an EP. It's called Cold Mess, Cold/Mess, and the record's been out for a few weeks. Yeah, the record's primarily about heartbreak. It comes from, you know, a past relationship of mine, and the title track is about, it's kind of like it encompasses the entire record and the vibe of the record. I'm also going to go on tour with it later this month across a few cities in the US. You can find all the information on my website, pratikkuhar.com/tour. And yeah.
When I feel calm, I'll keep you close. And if I could hold you and take you home, when at night your toes touch mine, I'll sing you to sleep if you are mine to keep. I wish I could leave you my love, but my heart is a mess. My days, they begin with your name, and nights end with your breath. I wish I could leave you my love, but my heart is a mess. My days, to sway just like it was Friday night, and all the lights were blinding me dry, and my love is your side. I can feel it when you cry. I wish I could leave you my love, but my heart is a mess. My days, they begin with your name, and nights end with your breath. I could leave you my love, but my heart is a mess. My days, they begin with your name, and nights end with your breath. With your breath. When I feel cold, I keep you close. And if I could hold you and take you home, and if I could hold you.
And thanks so much to Pratik. I realized there was a little audio weirdness on that episode. At some point, the track he was recording of himself ended, so we had to use my backup track, which did not sound nearly as good. In any case, it's very exciting to connect with an artist in his prime doing the work that will establish his reputation. This guy should be doing duets with Taylor Swift within the year. Maybe. I don't know. Hey, I hope you visit nakedlyexaminedmusic.com and listen to more of these interviews. Next one will be with singer-songwriter Rod Picott for some very literate Americana. He's an actual short story writer as well as a songwriter. Very good stuff. And oh, whoa, won't you join the legions of Nakedly Examined Music listeners that make this podcast possible by going to patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic and signing up for a small pledge. I also encourage you to follow us on Facebook, share this episode and others with those you love. Go give us a nice rating or review in the iTunes store. And of course, keep on musicking. This is Mark Lintermeyer signing off. Hold the head.